Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, April 2nd, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at FranStorchND for 30 days after recording, because that's the rule now. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Things are going pretty well. I had a good spin class yesterday. I worked really hard. I sweat my brains out, and I'm doing all right. My knee's pretty good. I think it's the supplements and the strengthening. I'm bracing when I exercise, and that seems to be working. So as long as I can keep that knee going, I will keep that knee going. If the knee does something bad again, then I'll be back to the orthopedist and say, all right, I am a person who wants to do exercise, not just, you know, easing, you know, not just 6 miles on the rail trail, but having a goal of thousands of miles a year and work some hills and, you know, exercise hard. So please help me to do that. And I understand that you take care of the likes of Paige Beckers and Ice Brady. So please take care of me too. Yeah. So that's what's going on with me. How about you?
Me? Eh, not so good.
Yeah, you're cramp boy.
I am cramp boy.
Yeah.
Which makes me cranky and angry and
I know.
Tired.
Well, especially if it wakes you up in the middle of the night and it affects your sleep.
I didn't sleep much last night.
No, that's no good.
Because I kept waking up with hand cramps.
That makes me think it's your neck.
Yeah, well, I think it might be.
That you have compression on your spinal cord, on your neck. The brachial plexus is the nerve plexus that feeds your arms. And if you have compression on your brachial plexus or whatever, it's, I believe, C5 to C7, cervical, the vertebrae 5 through 7. That's where it arises from. And the nerves come out and they feed your arms. And if there's compression there, they're not going to work right.
Yeah, it's arms and legs both.
And legs too. Well, anything that's south of your neck can get affected. It can affect everything in the spine, everything that the spine affects all the way down.
Well, I was also talking to my friend John about it this morning at the community center, and he had, you know, chronic Lyme.
Yeah.
And he said for 6 months or better until he finally started feeling better again. But he said there were moments that he said he just sat down and started crying.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because it hurt so bad, because he's an athlete.
Right.
He was a coach, and he was a gym teacher, and, you know, that's what he did. And he said he just couldn't function, and he said you just get tired of it after a while.
Oh yeah, it's very upsetting.
And it is, it's very tiring. I think that's probably more than anything else. I mean, you really kind of hit the nail on the head, because I don't think a lot of people understand what I'm going through, but he seemed to really get it. But
yeah,
it's hard, because everything I do is based around me moving my body,
right,
and helping others move their bodies,
right.
And when I can't move mine, it makes it a lot harder to be positive with getting everyone else inspired to move theirs. So
it's true. It's, when you do the level of athletics
little,
that we
I'm
do...
I'm a little bummed about it right now.
Oh, no kidding. When you do the level of athletics that we do, it's gut-wrenching to not be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if everyone understands that. And most people that doctors see... don't exercise at the level that we do.
Right.
So they just sort of literally limp through life. And that's not good enough for me.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think of a way to describe it to someone. And I said to them this morning, because they were asking in spin class, you know, how I was doing. And I said, you know, I haven't been able to sweat for about a year.
Right.
Because I can't work hard enough to sweat.
Right. Right.
And that
makes
just kind of tells you a lot.
Yeah.
Give me a flat road, I'm fine. I can walk it, I can ride it, I can do anything I want on it. But the minute I get a hill in, I'm in trouble, or a set of stairs.
Yeah, that's just not right. And so again, so we're looking at, do you have some compression in your spinal column? Mm-hmm. Do you, is it the chronic Lyme, which right. we're working on? And is it, do you have muscle degeneration because you took evolocumab?
Right. And then I just read a few different articles about nerve damage from that particular PCSK9 inhibitors.
Right. That they cause nerve damage.
There's still, the studies are still out there.
Yeah.
So I'm not the only one who's complaining about it, because apparently there are others that are having a similar issue with it, and there's no real conclusive study as to whether or not it does or not, but the fact is it seems to have happened.
Well, if you have nerve damage, then I have to alter my focus on what I'm offering. I have some more stuff that you could take.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah. Well, if you have nerve damage, then we think about benfotiamine, which is very easy. I have a high dose benfotiamine. It's very pleasant. It's just, you know, one pill a day. And it's activated vitamin B1. And benfotiamine, we give it to patients with neuropathy for all kinds of reasons, including diabetes. Mm. And so it helps to regenerate nerves. You could also take lipoic acid, which also helps with that. And you could also take something like phosphatidylserine. So, you know, we'll see. And I could try to find a combination product for you as well that has a little of this and a little of that.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't care. Just fix it.
I know. So after you get diagnosed by the neurologist, we'll see what the neurologist says, mm-hmm. and then we'll make some decisions after that. Yeah.
Well, I'll know more after 2:30 this afternoon.
Yeah, so. You'll know more, but there may be some follow up.
I think there's going to be a lot everything. More follow up.
Yeah, so that's good. So we're actually recording that. This show may not be broadcast on WHUS. It'll be broadcast. Ron's show will be broadcast in a couple of days. But this show, if you're listening to WHUS, it's April 2nd. But we're recording on St. Patrick's Day, so. I'm wearing St. Patrick's stuff. It says, good day for, what does it say?
For a lucky day.
For a lucky day, yes. So, and then I have my Mardi Gras beads that are St. Patrick's Day, that are shamrocks, and Ron has some too. I made gluten-free Irish soda bread on Saturday. So here it is. It's Irish soda bread. I had to cut it up and freeze some of it because we don't eat it that fast. And Irish soda bread is very plain. You don't put a lot of sugar into it. And so you can throw jam on it. You can throw nut butter. You can throw butter. It's a little bit sweet. But, you know, I might consider dipping it in soup. I left out the caraway seeds because I wanted to give some to my office manager, Amy. And she doesn't like caraway seeds. So I left those out. But I put three kinds of fruit in it. I put dried cranberries, dried black currants, and I cut up dried apricots, and I threw those in too. So it's a little fruity. It has some fiber in it. And they wanted me to put buttermilk in it, but I didn't want to do buttermilk. I did use actual butter because I can tolerate butter, but I'm not so great with milk. So I used coconut milk instead. And it came out pretty good. It's crumbly. It's the texture of a scone. I don't know if Ron likes it or not. But it's pretty good. I mean, it's a little on the sweet side because of the fruit, so it's kind of nice. So it's kind of fun. It's really not hard to make. I mean, I'm not an incredibly talented baker, but I can follow a recipe, and this wasn't that hard to do. You put in 3 cups of gluten-free flour, and if the gluten-free flour already has xanthan gum in it, you're all set. If it doesn't, then you add xanthan gum, which we happen to have. And then you put in like 1/4 cup of sugar, which isn't a huge amount, and a stick of butter, and like a couple of tablespoons. I can't remember how many tablespoons. A couple of tablespoons of baking soda. I don't think there's any baking powder, just baking soda. And then you do the fruit, and you make a dough out of it. And what you do when you put the butter in cold, so you get little butter pebbles in the dough. So it's a coarse dough. And it's really neat how that happens. And I thought it was going to all be mixed together. But no, you're just going to get little dough pebbles that are, you know, butter dough pebbles in it, that all through it. And it gives it this nice coarse consistency. And you make it into a round loaf, and then you slap it on a pan with parchment paper on it, and you throw it in the oven for, I don't remember, but like almost an hour. And then you have Irish soda bread. It's great. And so it's a nice little celebration, and it beats having to drive somewhere far away to get gluten-free Irish soda bread, because I could get Irish soda bread locally, but it wouldn't be gluten-free. So now Ron can have it, and it's good. So I was happy about that. And I don't know what we're going to eat today. I don't think we're going to have corned beef because I wouldn't do so well with it. No. So maybe I'll eat a little bit of sauerkraut. Or you could run to Big Y and get turkey pastrami and we could have something like that. I don't know. We'll see. So we're sort of celebrating St. Patrick's Day today. And I hope whenever you're listening to this, that you had a good one. Everybody's Irish today. And Ron may actually be a little bit Irish. Are you a little bit Irish?
No one knows. No one knows. I'm half Italian, half League of Nations.
Yes, right. League of Nations.
So, yeah. Because we really don't know.
And I am probably 99-ish% Ashkenazic Jew and 1% Asian. That's what I am.
Asian?
Yep. Yes, if you have any Russian Jewish descent, you probably have a little bit of Asian in you.
Oh.
Yeah, I think Cousin Alan...
I've never been tested. So.
Yeah, I think Cousin Alan did his ancestry DNA, and he found out that he was a little bit Asian. And if he is, I probably am too. If the Asian bit came from the Rothbaum side, because I share the Rothbaum ancestry with Cousin Alan, but not he has a Levin ancestry, and I have a Storch ancestry. And my mother thinks, oh, we definitely have a little bit of Asian because look at Aunt Jane. She has almond-shaped eyes. All right. So that's fine. And whatever genetics Aunt Jane has, my mother has similar ones. So that's nice. So anyway, no Irish for me, but I do enjoy Irish stuff. And I did live in the province of Newfoundland, and I was the first naturopathic physician in the province of Newfoundland. So I'm sure they're having a great time today and that they're imbibing on George Street. And maybe tonight we'll have a little, you can have your bourbon and I'll have my, do you have any Irish whiskey?
I don't think I have any Irish whiskey.
But you don't care because you'd rather have your bourbon.
I have. From the Irish section of Kentucky.
Right. Which there's probably some Irish people in Kentucky.
There's probably a few. Yeah.
Yes, I was talking to my friend on Zwift today, and he said his partner is from the Irish section of Kansas. I guess there is one. But I will have Baileys, however. Yeah, because I enjoy a little Baileys. And my rule is if I want a drink, I get to drink whenever I want. Because it's so rare. I don't remember the last time I had a glass of alcohol. It might have been, I don't know, New Year's. Maybe not even then. I really don't remember. Maybe it was at Christmas time. I can't remember. So if I want a drink, I get to have a drink. Because I usually have one. Maybe I finish it and maybe I don't. It's very funny. I have a weird relationship with alcohol. I mean, it doesn't... If I drink a lot of alcohol, there's a very narrow window between enjoying the alcohol and being fun, and praying to the porcelain goddess. So, I don't drink much. I have a Jewish, I don't make a lot of alcohol dehydrogenase genes. Okay, so let's talk about some help for osteoarthritis, and then some help for weight loss if we can get to it. All right, so let's talk about, because it's St. Patrick's Day today, let's talk about green lift muscle. And if you see pictures, I encourage you to go online and look at pictures of green-lipped muscle. They really do. They look like an ordinary muscle, you know, a muscle that you get from the ocean or the fresh water. I think that these are cultivated or harvested in the ocean. And one side of them has a green lip, and it's bright green, like almost iridescent green, like iridescent emerald green. And that's the green-lipped muscle. And the species genus is Perna. Anyway... I am taking green-lipped muscle, and I'm very happy with it. I think since I've been taking the Perna, I've gone another level of healing with my knee. So green-lipped muscle, here's pictures of it online, and you can see the edge of the shell is bright green. It's also known as the New Zealand muscle, and it's native to New Zealand. It's supposed to have medicinal properties, and it's popular as a supplement. It contains several anti-inflammatory compounds that help to treat inflammatory conditions like asthma. So you can take it for asthma too, but it definitely is helpful for arthritis. So they have a lot of nutrients in them. It's a staple food of the Maori people of New Zealand's coasts. And the health benefits, interest in the greenlit mussel happened in the early 70s and stemmed from the observation that the Maori people had a lower incidence of arthritis than people who lived inland. Who knew? It was later determined that the mussels were a great source of anti-inflammatory omega-3 fatty acids like EPA and DHA. So I already take fish oil, so I'm getting the EPA and DHA there. They've also identified other fatty acids from greenlit mussel that are anti-inflammatory. They inhibit enzymes and proteins that produce inflammation and pain. They also contain chondroitin sulfate. So they contain glycosaminoglycans, which are which help you rebuild your connective tissue, like your joints and bones, and also help reduce inflammation because you have more integrity to your joints. In addition to those anti-inflammatory nutrients, they're a good source of zinc, iron, selenium, and B vitamins. So they really can help with inflammation. They can help with asthma. I didn't think of greenlit mussel for asthma, but there you go. Asthma is a chronic inflammatory condition, can make breathing difficult. If you reduce inflammation in the lungs, airways, it can benefit people with asthma. One study gave people with asthma either 400 milligrams of greenlit mussel or a placebo every day for 3 weeks and then crossed over. Compared to the placebo, the extract led to significant reductions in airway inflammation and asthma symptoms. There was another study where they found people with asthma had a similar extract and it reduced the asthma symptom frequency and airway inflammation when taken daily compared with placebo. And then it helps with arthritis, which is characterized by painful swelling and stiffness in one or more joints, which results from chronic inflammation. The most common types of arthritis are osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis. So rheumatoid arthritis, there's the condition rheumatoid arthritis, and then there are rheumatic conditions that cause arthritis. So if you have other autoimmune conditions, they can lead to arthritis like lupus and scleroderma and mixed connective tissue disorders. So there's psoriatic arthritis. They all cause rheumatic conditions. So you could use the greenlit mussel for any of those conditions. Due to the anti-inflammatory properties, greenlit mussel has been claimed to reduce joint inflammation, which helps relieve arthritis symptoms. One review concluded that there's limited evidence compared with other nutrition, like directly taking glucosamine and chondroitin, which have more scientific backing. But there was another review of 4 randomized clinical trials that concluded it definitely improves joint stiffness in people with osteoarthritis. It can't be attributed to the extract alone. It's because the patients were taking pain-relieving medications. Now, I am not taking any. I only take pharmaceuticals for pain if I'm really, really in a lot of pain. And that happens really rarely. And I will generally only take that if I'm having a flare of femoral neuralgia or a flare of sciatica. I don't take pain medications for everyday aches and pains, but I do take natural anti-inflammatories like fish oil and curcumin, and I'm taking Japanese knotweed, which has resveratrol in it. So these studies, so there are other trials that have been conducted in the last few years, but the studies can be equivocal. The evidence is weak. However, I'm telling you that when I take it, it seems to help. I'm offering it to patients and I'm trying to see how if it helps with their arthritis pain. Greenlit mussel can help with delayed onset muscle soreness, which is characterized by stiff muscle soreness and stiffness 24 to 48 hours after intense or unfamiliar workout, which can last for a few days. There are a few factors that contribute to delayed onset muscle soreness, also known as DOMS, one of which is muscle damage from a workout that causes inflammatory response. While studies haven't quite found any improvement in DOMS from commercial greenlit mussel as extract in well-trained athletes, 400 milligrams of the extract for 11 weeks reduce pain sensations in lesser-trained individuals. It can be used for ADHD, too, which is a common childhood disorder that which causes trouble paying attention and organizing tasks and activities. And the causes of ADHD are largely unknown, but there's a big genetic component that's thought to play a role. And ADHD has also been associated with inflammation. There was a study in children 6 to 14 with ADHD symptoms, and they had significant improvements in learning and ability following 8, but not 14 weeks of supplementation with a commercial extract containing 150 to 200 milligrams of greenlip mussel. That's the only trial to date, so you can't quite rely on it. I don't know if I would go, if I had a child come in with ADHD, I don't know if I'd reach for the greenlip mussel first. I tend to reach for straight up fish oil first and other herbs that directly affect the brain. I tend to reserve greenlip mussel for arthritis. I didn't think about it for asthma. I tend to start with fish oil and magnesium for asthma, but who knows? Thing with greenlip mussel is you have a combination, but this is what I really like about it, that is a combination of omega-3 fatty acids, and it doesn't just have EPA and DHA, it has some other omega-3 fatty acids, and it also has glycosaminoglycans, which directly help to rebuild your joints. So I like that it has that combination, and, you know, if people don't want to take glucosamine, I'm not sure if I've ever tried actually directly taking glucosamine. I certainly could. I'm certainly a candidate for it, but it's more likely to cause some digestive upset. The Perna doesn't bother me at all. The greenlip mussel extract doesn't bother me at all. You can get it in oil or powder form, and you can find online or your local health food store, or from a practitioner that happens to sell supplements. You can also find gels and creams that help to ease joint pain that are topical. And many of the studies examining the anti-inflammatory properties have used an oil extract. The results indicating EPA, eicosapentaenoic acid, may be better absorbed from powdered forms than from the oil extract. If you're looking to try greenlip mussel, make sure it was produced using methods that retain the mussel's natural nutrient profile. If it's freeze-dried, it can be helpful, and look for reputable supplement companies. Don't take them if you have shellfish allergies, and certainly if you're allergic to mussels, don't take them. And don't take them if you're pregnant or lactating, because it's not clear about the safety information. There have been some adverse side effects. Also, there are some reports of liver inflammation with a brand of supplements that contain toxins produced by the mussels, so you have to be careful of that. And some people got fluid retention, nausea, and upset stomach. I don't have any of those. I'm very pleased with that. And they may negatively interact or enhance the side effects of certain medications like blood thinners and anti-inflammatory meds. So if you're taking, you have to be careful if you're taking anti-inflammatories as well as blood thinners. So if you're taking rivaroxaban or apixaban or clopidogrel, or any drug, or warfarin, if you're taking any of those drugs, you have to be careful. You have to be careful if you take any supplement, even essential fatty acids, that thins the blood. And like if people come in and they're on those things, I might offer them fish oil, but at low doses, and I monitor whether they get extra bleeding or bruising. So greenlip mussels are native to New Zealand. They're a staple food in the diets of the indigenous Maori people and popular as a supplement. They contain omega-3 fatty acids and chondroitin sulfate, some vitamins and minerals. The evidence is kind of inconsistent. I'm an N of one, and I'm here to say that it's helpful. I think it's helpful for me. And I have bone on bone. On femurs, and my femurs and patellas are bone on bone in both knees. And right now I'm able to ride my bike, and I'm able to ride my bike fairly aggressively. We'll see as the season progresses if I'm able to ride more aggressively, but I've been able to climb some nasty hills and go on Zwift, and I haven't been off the bike. You know, I haven't been sidelined for my knees in a long time. Last Sunday I was exhausted, so I didn't do any exercise. But this week I've been feeling pretty good, so I've been riding either outdoors or indoors on all the days that I usually do. So make sure that when you get it, it was freeze-dried, and talk to your healthcare practitioner about the risk of side effects. So that's your green-lipped mussel inflammation. So there are exercises that you can do that will help with your knees. So one of the things that happened when I went to see Dr. Zachary Moss, the osteopath up at UConn, who works on the UConn Huskies, the world famous UConn Huskies. Anyway, so when he met me, he said, one of the things you want to do is get your legs really strong. And he didn't give me specific exercises to do, but my physical therapist had. So I do wall leg lifts where I sit against, I don't sit against the wall because our wall is covered in stuff in our bedroom. So there's no wall space for me to lean against. If I wanted to lean against the wall, I'd have to go downstairs. So I don't. I lean against the bed, and that works for me. And I just lift one leg at a time and hold for 6 seconds. And I alternate sides, and I do 8 of those, and I do 2 sets of those twice a week. I probably could do them more, but I definitely do them twice a week, and I think that's helpful. The other thing I've been doing for many years is one-legged deadlifts. So I stand on one leg, and I hold light weights. You don't have to use light weights. You can just have your arms forward, because the point is you're going for the balance and the one-legged, the strengthening of the muscles to hold you up on one leg. So it's not necessary to use weights. But if you do use weights, it gives you a lever, and you could use extremely light weights if you want to, just to give you something to hold on to. One-legged deadlifts are also often done with a bar. So if you're at the gym or you happen to have a bar at home, you can hold on to a bar. I don't like to use a really heavy weight because I prefer to focus on the balance than on trying to hold on to that bar. So personally, I use 8-pound weights in each hand. You can use really light weights. If you want to use a weight, you can use really light weights, 1 or 2 pounds or 3 pounds or something like that. And then I stand on one leg and I lean forward, lifting up one of my legs with my arms holding onto the weight straight down at my sides. And I just lean forward and I come to my back leg comes to horizontal, and then I put it down, and then I do the other side, and I alternate back and forth. I do 2 sets of 15 of those twice a week. And so those are helpful for balance, and they're also helpful for strengthening the muscles around the joint. So when you have degenerated joints, one of the important things to do is strengthen the muscles and ligaments around the joint so you're holding them in place, so the joint itself isn't doing all the work of cushioning and moving and supporting the joint. So that's what Dr. Zach is talking about, getting the knees strong. So you're strengthening the muscles and ligaments all around the joint, the anterior cruciate ligaments, the posterior cruciate ligaments, the collaterals, the medial collateral, the lateral collateral, all of those ligaments. And then you're strengthening, of course, your quads and your hamstrings as well. All of these cross and support the knee joint. So when you strengthen those muscles, that's why he says, go ride your bike. Riding your bike is a great thing to strengthen your knees. If you're not riding in such a way that you aggravate it, riding your bike is a really great thing to do to strengthen the whole knee, articular surface of the knee, all of the joints and ligaments and muscles that support the knee can be strengthened by cycling. So he's very positive about that. So as long as I'm not in terrible pain, I'm going to continue to ride. There's more exercises like clamshells. So what you do is you lie on your side, and you can just do the clamshells as is, or you can put a band around your thighs to give yourself some resistance. So you put it above the knee around your thighs, you lie on your side, and you leave the bottom knee on the ground, and you lift the top knee up so that it is perpendicular to the ground. And you're opening up your knees and it looks like a clam. So they're called clamshells. And you do, you know, I probably do 15 of those on either side. And again, twice a week, at least twice a week is helpful. So those are good. And then side monster walks. Probably front monster walks are good too. So monster walks, again, you would put a band around your ankles. Monster walks are, you put the band around your ankles, and if you're going sideways, you're just sidestepping. So we have a little hallway in our house, and I step to the side. Step together, step out, step together, step out. And I go the distance of a hall and I come back and I do a couple of those. And and you can also do front monster walks. So again, you put the bands around your ankles and you walk forward. And as you walk forward, you basically do it similar to John Cleese's silly walk. So you lift your leg up high and step down and lift your leg up high and step down against resistance of that band. And those can also be helpful for strengthening your knees. I'm sure there's lots more exercises than that. So let's see. So there's more exercises that, this is the Arthritis Foundation. They want you to keep your quadriceps flexible, so doing a quad stretch. And you can do a quad stretch. When I'm focusing on stretching my quad, I'm not focused on dancer pose, meaning that I have my foot in one hand and my arm out. I see people doing that in spin at the end of spin class, but I don't think that's necessary. If the focus is simply stretching your quad, hold on to something with your other hand. So you can hold on to a chair, the wall, or the sofa, or anything you want, and then hold on to reach for your ankle in the back and bend your knee. And so you're going to feel a stretch in the front of your thigh. That's where your quadricep is. You can do bridge with leg extension progression. So you get in a bridge pose. You're lying on your back, and you have both feet. You have your knees bent and your feet on the floor, and you lift up one leg at a time, and you hold it up, and you lift the leg up and put it down. And then there's sit to stands, which Ron does in his exercise classes, where you're sitting in a chair and you're basically doing a squat and you're practicing getting up and down out of a chair. And there's specific ways to do that. You can do step-ups too. And so you can step up onto a stool or get an actual, stepper, which I have, an actual stepper for aerobic activity. And you can do the step-ups with no risers, or you can use a couple of risers. I think I have the stepper and then I have one or two risers for each side. And then we already said the side steps with resistance band. You can do speed skaters with or without resistance band. So you hold on to a chair and you kick your knees back while you drag your toe on the floor and kick your knees back and you can put a band on when you do that. You can just do straight up leg lifts, working your quadriceps. So that, again, you can sit in a chair and do that. And so those are chair leg lifts, and I like to do the wall leg lifts. You can do a leg press with a resistance band. So you can sit in a chair and put a band around the bottom of your foot and then lift your leg that way. And then there's a seated knee lift with a resistance band. So you put put the band, looks like in a figure eight, around your feet, and you lift your feet one at a time. So these are really, really helpful. They're simple exercises. If you want to look at them, you can go to the Arthritis Foundation knee exercises, and you can do all these knee exercises. This is a lot more knee exercises than I'm doing. I probably could do more of them than I do. And my knees would get really strong, and I'd never have to worry about getting surgery. Let's hope. I don't know. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to extend the life of my knees. And the other thing I'm doing, of course, to extend the life of my knees is to take supplements and also getting acupuncture and going to the chiropractor. So here's the thing with acupuncture. Acupuncture is definitely recommended by the Arthritis Foundation. Okay. So we are looking for acupuncture for arthritis. There we go. So our acupuncture has been around for a good 2000 years, and now it has some mainstream acceptance as a medical modality. There's limited research. The theory of acupuncture, there's an essential life energy, qi, flows through your body along 20 invisible channels called the meridians. When the flow of the energy is blocked or out of balance, illness or pain can result. More than 2,000 acupuncture points connect to the meridians. If you stimulate those points with needles, it will correct the flow of qi and alleviate pain. So with arthritis, Western medicine doesn't recognize the concept of qi and meridians. They're lost. However, scientific evidence suggests alternate explanations for why acupuncture might provide pain relief. So here's the MD explanation of arthritis. There's a lot of research that says when we put an acupuncture needle into the body, a number of physiological mechanisms occur. And Brian Berman said this, and he's at the Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. A well-placed needle sets off a cascade of events. It produces a signal that travels along the spinal cord to the brain, which triggers neurotransmitters called endorphins and enephalins, which scientists believe reduce the sensation of pain. Research also shows that inserting an acupuncture needle induces the production of cortisol, and that helps control inflammation. It also stimulates activity of other pain-relieving chemicals in the body as well. Does it relieve sore stiff joints? So they found that after 26 weeks, patients receiving real acupuncture felt significantly less pain and functioned better as measured by how far they could walk in 6 minutes than counterparts who received sham. So the research shows in osteoarthritis, even though patients offer anecdotal evidence that acupuncture helps them, most studies only say that it helps with minimal pain relief. I still recommend it because some people it really does help. When they compare it to sham acupuncture in people with hip osteoarthritis, there was an unblinded trial that found that acupuncture, when it added to routine primary physician care, was associated with reduced pain and improved function. The benefits are, they think, are at least partially because patients have greater expectations. Well, the greater expectations, look, the placebo effect is real. And the thing is, if you have a negative attitude about whatever outcome you're going to have in terms of your healing, you're going to have a worse outcome. And because when you have a bad attitude, it's not just an esoteric concept. The idea is that if you have a bad attitude, you're going to make neurotransmitters that keep your mood down, that you're going to have lower levels of serotonin and dopamine, which both help with pain pathways and your mood. And those are things that actually assist with alleviating the pain. So if you participate in your care and have a positive attitude, you will have a better outcome. And that just makes sense. If you do things that reduce stress, you're going to have a better outcome. So if you engage in deep breathing or meditation or yin or restorative yoga or qigong or tai chi, those things, or prayer, anything that results in reduced cortisol. When you have too much cortisol around, you have more stress and you have more degeneration and you have more oxidative stress. So anything that reduces stress is going to help your outcome. So if you have a bad attitude, that increases stress and will increase oxidative damage. For rheumatoid arthritis, that's when you have actual inflammatory compounds being produced in your body in an autoimmune fashion. There's suggestions that acupuncture may hold a beneficial role in treatment. In evidence-based complementary and alternative medicine, they conclude that acupuncture alone or combined with other treatment modalities is beneficial to rheumatoid arthritis and can improve function and quality of life. And it's worth trying because it also helps to regulate the immune system. There's definitely inconsistency among findings. The thing is, when you're offering acupuncture to people, you can't control for everything, because if you have different practitioners, nobody practices exactly the same time in the same way. And nobody's bodies are in the exact same state every time you do the acupuncture. So you're trying to introduce consistency in something that has inherent variability. So the studies are not necessarily going to tell you what's going on. If you come in with way more inflammation on one day and less inflammation on another day, or you come in and you have a terrible stressful day one day and you are pretty relaxed on another day, you may get differing results. So just because the studies aren't perfect doesn't mean don't go try it. I mean, 2,000 years of Chinese medicine can't be all wrong, in my opinion. And personally, I get acupuncture regularly. I would like to get it more often, but my insurance doesn't cover it, so I don't go all the time. But every few weeks I do go, and I have a nice session with my acupuncturist, Nicole. And I think it's helpful. I find it very relaxing, and I think it's helpful it's one of the modalities I'm using to help with the various issues in my body. Acupuncture has been reviewed for fibromyalgia, where you have lots of tender points in your body. There were 9 studies on acupuncture for fibromyalgia. Some studies found that it worked better than drugs to manage the condition. The studies were, the design wasn't okay. And again, fibromyalgia is not fibromyalgia. If fibromyalgia presents differently depending on what's going on with the particular person. And fibromyalgia can be caused by a lot of different things. So again, to say it doesn't really work for fibromyalgia, it really depends on the person. When a person walks in with fibromyalgia, you have to find out what's going on with them, because there could be a lot of things going on with them. And so, just because, again, this isn't one of those things, 2,000 years of study, 2,000 years of use in stemming from ancient China, I think it's still worth doing. And try it and see if it's helpful for you, because it's not harmful. If you're afraid of needles, maybe you don't want to do it. But if you're afraid of needles and you want to benefit from Chinese medicine, you can take Chinese herbs. You can also get acupressure, where somebody uses their fingers to press on acupuncture points for you. So here's a shout out to people who are listening. Lori and Craig are listening. So shout out. Hello to you. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Yep, they're listening on YouTube Live, which is exciting. All right, here's what I've been saying. Just a placebo effect, it doesn't matter. Some experts question whether pain relief noted in the studies is real or the result of placebo. Patients feeling better simply as a result of having needles applied to their skin. There was a meta-analysis in 2012 in JAMA, the Journal of American Medical Association. They found real acupuncture was more effective than placebo at treating chronic pain, but only slightly. 50% of acupuncture patients said their pain improved by half or more, compared to 42.5% of patients receiving placebo treatments. So it depends what the placebo treatments were, because if the placebo treatments were pain relieving, then that's not a good study. And the other piece is that, the acupuncture treatment was somewhat more effective than just placebo. And when you participate in your care, you are going to have a better outcome because of the reasons I said. But for scientific reasons, you'll tend to have a better outcome. So there are doctors that say that even if acupuncture's health benefits are largely due to placebo, it could still be worth trying. That's what I say. There's a lot of research that shows that fake needles and other placebos may prevent pain signals from reaching the brain and promote other biological changes that can relieve symptoms of osteoarthritis and other conditions. If I have chronic pain and someone offers an intervention that'll improve my symptoms, I'll be thinking, of course I want that, says Dr. Evans, who's a professor at University of California in San Francisco. If our ultimate goal is to help patients achieve their goals, the mechanism is not all that relevant. So how much of a benefit you receive may depend on how severe your arthritis is and how often you get treated. Multiple sessions may not be cost effective because acupuncture sessions can be costly. It's great if you have an insurance plan that covers it. I don't. So I have to pay out of pocket, which means I go less frequently. But you should check your insurance to see if it will cover all or part of it. And many U.S. insurers do provide some coverage, but what conditions they cover may vary. In some states, even Medicaid will cover a limited number of acupuncture sessions for specific diagnoses, as will some Medicare Advantage plans. You should look into it. Maybe you could get acupuncture.
I think I can. There's a copay, but yeah.
So why don't you do it?
Yeah, I think I will.
Okay.
I was just reading about it.
Are you going to go see Nicole?
I don't know. Like, maybe.
Yeah. Why not? All right. If you'd like to try acupuncture, make sure you find a trained and experienced practitioner. What I would recommend is find someone who is trained in traditional Chinese medicine. Somebody who uses the principles of traditional Chinese medicine to treat traditional Chinese, that they define your conditions in terms of Chinese medicine. So you have liver fire rising, you have excessive liver qi, you have kidney yin deficiency, that they know how to diagnose you in those terms, because you're going to get a better result, because they're going to know the right places to put needles. So make sure you do that, and find out if make sure your acupuncturist is licensed in your state, and we have licensing for acupuncture in the state of Connecticut. And again, if they're licensed, then they're more likely to be able to be covered by insurance. And make sure they've gone to a reputable acupuncture school that provides a licensed acupuncturist degree or a doctor of acupuncture, that you can get a doctorate in acupuncture medicine as well, in Chinese medicine. So, and you could consider seeing someone who also does Chinese herbs. And Nicole does do some work with Chinese herbs. She will give you some Chinese herbal formulas if you want to do that. So acupuncture, I'm a fan. I am sad that I didn't stay in Oregon longer so I could also get my LAC. I think when you go to naturopathic college now, they make it easy to combine your acupuncture degree with your ND degree. Back then, you had to also attend the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine. And a lot of there were a lot of classes. There was overlap in classes. Not only that, I remember the students from OCOM, the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine, Western States Chiropractic College, they would come take classes at NCNM. There were certain classes that they just came to our school to take. So we had a relationship with those colleges, and we would get, we had a reciprocity in which you could go to the clinic at OCOM and you get inexpensive acupuncture treatments, and they could come to us and get inexpensive naturopathic care at our clinic. So that was really cool, because you got to experience, I got a lot of acupuncture treatments when I was in naturopathic college, because it was easy to do and it wasn't too expensive. So that was very nice. And I just really wish I had gotten my LAC, because I believe in Chinese medicine and I believe it's very helpful. So, all right. So that's, we are going to set osteoarthritis aside for now, except for updating you as to what's going on with my health, and you know what things I'm trying and what things are I'm using to help me with my osteoarthritis. And if anything new comes up, I'll let you know. And of course, we're waiting for the day where Ron can get back on his bike and blast up the hill and leave me.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we're hoping for that, and we're hoping that we figure something out. We're hoping we're going to get somewhere with this neurologist appointment. That's exciting. So he's going to see Dr. Toro today. Do you know what Toro means in Italian?
I'm about to hear.
Well, what's your sign?
Taurus.
Uh-huh. So what does Toro mean in Italian?
Taurus. Bull.
Yeah. I don't know if he's a Taurus, but I mean, he has a whole family, so they were probably born at different times.
Yeah. So is he Italian?
Probably. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
When I ran into him, he was an older gentleman, and he, I don't know. I'm not sure. And he did not look like he was Latino. So, yeah. If your name was, if you were Latino, your name wouldn't be, it would be T-O-R-O. And if you were Latino, or your name would be Torres, but Torres is a tower. So he's not Latino. So he's probably Italian. Yeah. Anyway, you'll see. And you'll be like, so the Gumbares will have a conference today. Okay. All right. So here is a new method for measuring obesity. So let's see what this is about. So here, let me make sure that this is what I wanted to look at. Here we go.
He's 2 years right. Younger than me.
So there's a better, you found this out?
Yeah.
I called him an older gentleman.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're living with an older gentleman.
You're an older gentleman. Yes!
I don't know how gentle I am.
We're going to have a party on your birthday.
Yeah.
All the people are going to come.
Yeah, come on by.
Yeah, it's an open house. Yeah, because you're going to be the big 7-0.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah.
Careful, that's a new decade.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel it.
Your eighth decade.
Well, I mean, currently with my current health conditions, I feel it a bit. But I'm still 39 with
right
30 years worth
experience. Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
I'm going with that.
And I'm hanging with an old guy.
I'm not that old.
You're a little old.
No, I'm not that old.
Okay.
No.
All right.
No. Yeah. I mean, years ago I was.
Years ago you were old?
Well, years ago 70 was old.
Right.
Right. But now it's just like, oh, 70?
Well, you were so much older then. You're younger than that now.
Now, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Bob.
That's a good song.
It is.
Yeah.
That's Bob.
We still haven't seen
Bobby. We still haven't seen the movie.
We haven't seen the movie.
We need to see that movie.
See the movie. All right.
Yeah.
Maybe this weekend. We'll see.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know.
So there was an international committee of scientists, and they proposed a change to the way obesity is defined and diagnosed. That's good. The goal is to offer a more nuanced and objective way to assess body composition by adding more metrics, such as waist circumference, to the criteria. I was doing that for a while. I started measuring people's waist circumference, but it just takes so much time. So for years, the method physicians have been used to determine whether a person has obesity is to calculate their BMI, or body mass index. It's quick and easy to determine because it's just a function of height and weight. It doesn't tell you anything about the person's body composition. So BMI doesn't provide adequate information about a person's health, and the reliance on BMI alone can result in misdiagnosis. So the current BMI measure of obesity can overestimate and underestimate how much body fat a person has. That's why it's a good idea to measure their body fat. I actually got a new scale that does body fat, but I haven't been doing it yet because it takes more time. But I might start doing it because it takes more time only because the patient has to remove their socks. And so I might start doing it maybe at their first visit. I might start adding it in. About 40% of the adult population in America has obesity, which is defined solely by BMI. So I don't have obesity. I have overweight, but because my BMI is around 27. So do all these millions of Americans have a disease, and do they need treatment? I don't think so. I think I would do better at just, you know, eating less sugar and eating more fruits and vegetables. I mean, I eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, but I probably could eat more and less sugar. So my plan is, in the not too distant future, I'm hoping to jump on with Mark Hyman and do the PEGAN diet, which is paleo vegan. So I'm going to eat healthy animal protein and cut back on the kinds of carbs that I eat, you know, less bread, less flour, probably no flour, and then eat things like sweet potatoes and winter squash and cassava and oats and quinoa and black rice if I can tolerate. I tried to make black rice once and I think it gave me gas, and more beans. It's not too different than how I'm eating now. It's just, I would be taking out anything with flour in it. Which means I could still make my, flourless cookies, because the flourless cookies have, they don't have any flour in them. But that's what makes them flourless cookies, because they're just nut butter and flax seeds, and then whatever you want to put in them, and some kind of sweetener. And I could probably, instead of using sugar, I could use maple syrup or honey as the sweetener. And that'd be really interesting. So some people have very low muscle mass but carry excess weight around their organs. The BMI, I probably have too much body fat, but I also have good musculature. One of the things that happened was we were sitting in extreme spin class, and I was sitting next to my buddy, Dr. Mark Fisher Keller, who's a very nice man, a very jovial guy, and he is a retired cardiologist. And I remarked to him as we were sitting there, we looked around the room, I said, look at all the people in this room. I'm so used to seeing patients that are soft and fluffy. Like when I take their blood pressure, I notice that their arms are sort of bouncy and fluffy. Look at everybody, every single person, the legs in this room, everybody's legs, regardless of their size, whether they had a pooch or not, everybody had lovely, strong, well-muscled legs. So I'm here to say, if you ride a bicycle regularly, that will happen to you. If you ride it with any sort of intensity at all, and not even a lot of intensity, but I mean, so there are people there who will, I mean, we were talking to that one lady who said she doesn't ride on the road anymore. And so a regular practice of indoor cycling, or indoor cycling and outdoor cycling, you'll get really well-muscled legs, and they'll look good. You know, they don't look fluffy. And everybody in the room had really nice, well-muscled legs, regardless of their age, because there were people, the people in the room were ranging, I was probably the youngster in the room, and or maybe Laura. Laura might be a little bit younger than me, but not much. And everybody's in their 50s, 60s, 70s in that room. Do you have anybody in your 80s who comes to, in their 80s who comes to your spin class?
Not in my spin class, but in my senior fitness class.
Well, of
classes,
course.
Yes.
But your spin class, they're in their 50s to 70s.
Yeah, some of them deep into their 70s.
One of them, that's that one young woman who comes in, that young woman with the brown hair. She comes in. She's not, she looks like she's in her 20s or 30s.
Oh, you mean Karen?
Sure. I don't know. She was in Extreme Spin.
Oh, in Extreme Spin?
Yeah.
Oh,
that,
no, that's Shannon.
Shannon, yeah. Well, if her name's Shannon, she's probably in her 20s or 30s.
Shannon from Washington State.
Oh,
a
right.
A new arrival.
That's
here.
Right. Yeah, and she's
a new arrival.
She's a
here
youngster.
But
I was so impressed about how fit everybody looked, regardless of their size, their general size.
Everybody's pretty fit.
Some people are stocky and muscular. When they step on the scale, their body weight may place them in the category of obesity. Like that woman, the soccer player, she's obese because her height versus weight puts her in the obesity category, and yet she has a wicked high amount of muscle mass. On the other side, people have low muscle mass. We try to define obesity by excess body fat, which is what obesity actually is. So the commission recommends that excess body fat should be confirmed by measuring a person's waist circumference, waist to hip ratio, or waist to height ratio. Another option is a direct measurement of body fat from a screening like a DEXA scan when this option is available and affordable. Again, and you can also get, your doctor can get a scale that, and I think that the measurement is probably not great. It's not going to be as good as having an actual DEXA, but your body, if you take your shoes off and you have ordinary scales, that will send a current through you and be able to estimate your body fat. I have a digital scale that does that now. So fat in the belly causes systemic inflammation, which then goes on and causes other metabolic problems like elevated blood sugar, blood pressure, and increased blood fats. There's recommended two new categories of obesity. The first category is called clinical obesity for people who already have a chronic disease associated with it. And the second category is preclinical obesity, which signify that the person has elevated risk for developing a health condition because of their level of body fat. So if we reframe it, it acknowledges the nuanced reality of obesity and allows for personalized care. So the commission had 56 experts in nutrition, endocrinology, internal medicine, and public health. The report is published in Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology. And it comes amid a significant rise in obesity around the globe. The World Health Organization estimates more than 1 billion people are living with obesity, and the World Obesity Federation estimates that the economic impact of the condition will rise above $4 trillion by 2035. So that's all I got today. So we'll talk about, we'll start next week with supplements that can be helpful for fat loss. So, you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch-Andee, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch-Andee for 30 days after recording. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.